Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, friends? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Today, we've got a lot to discuss. We're going to talk about Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, two players that I keep hearing over and over and over again. Packers need to make a huge swing. Go get one of these big-time pass rushers in a trade. We'll talk about it today. Does it make sense? Could it be something that Green Bay theoretically could do? Is it completely off the table altogether? And should Green Bay actively pursue both players? We'll go through all of that today. Of course, a couple big pieces of news and notes that happened on Monday, specifically with one Rich Bisaccia. Now, if I had told you that there were huge news on Rich Bisaccia on Monday, what would you have expected that to be? Would you have expected that to be a retirement, a termination, a promotion, an extension? Well, it was maybe two of those things. It's for sure an extension. It's a little bit tough to glean if it's actually a promotion or not, but Rich Bisaccia will be sticking around with the Packers in 2025 and potentially in 2026. Sounds like he had 1 year left on his deal. This is all reported for Tom Silverstein and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And it sounds like he had 1 year left on his deal, was contemplating retirement. Green Bay made it worth his while to come back this year and signed him to a 1 year extension into 2027 as well. So looks like he's going to be around for a couple more years if all things go according to plan, whatever that plan may be. And in addition, it sounds like this was a little bit tough to glean from the article, and I'll be totally transparent. I'm not sure if this was something that was on Rich Bisaccia's plate already, but there seems to be a game management aspect of what Rich Bisaccia does as well. And I'll just say my apologies for not knowing this. Usually these are things that I have a decent pulse on. I'm not sure. And I couldn't glean from the article. And I like from things that I've seen across social media and whatnot, it seems like some people think that this was something he had. Other people feel like this is something new. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that is a good thing or bad thing. It's probably not great if he already had it, just because it hasn't been going great. If it's something that's new to his plate, all right, I can certainly understand that. And maybe that's something that can help out Matt LaFleur just a little bit. But I think the more interesting aspect of this, you know, of all of it, is this idea that a lot of people were hoping that Rich Bisaccia was going to be done after this season. I was not one of those people, not because I thought that Rich Bisaccia has been doing a great job, just because of a couple reasons. Number one, I just really didn't think Green Bay was going to do it. So I just kind of put it out of mind. Didn't even really think about it all that much. Didn't think there was any chance that they were going to move on from Bisaccia. Now, if he got, the inkling to retire or, you know, somehow got a head coaching job somewhere, okay, well then we'll have that conversation. But I never got the feel that Green Bay was going to move on from Rich Bisaccia for a couple of reasons. The main one is there has been slight improvement. Actually, I don't even know that that's the main one. That's maybe a reason. There's been some slight improvement. We'll go over that. The other thing is he's very well thought of in the organization and by the coaching staff and what he brings to the table. And there's if you've not been at a practice, Rich is a large degree different than a lot of the other coaches. I mean, he's more of the hard ass. He's more of getting on players. You're going to hear Rich at every practice. Like, it's different. Like, but he has the respect of his players. At least it certainly seems so. So I like in general, I like kind of having those different flavors of coaches out there and somebody that's going to bring something different to the table. I do think that there is probably value that he adds in general within the organization. I really, truly do believe that. Whether that's as a special teams coach, assistant head coach, you know, game manager, coordinator, whatever we want to do here, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not sure what the best use of his skills is, but I do think he probably is a value add within the organization. It's another reason I didn't see him going anywhere, but probably the actual main reason is because, you know, one of the things that coaches do look at sometimes, and I don't, maybe this didn't even cross Matt LaFleur's mind. It's probably closer to being true, but you do have to be careful sometimes if you can start getting the, tag that you're just going to fire coordinators every time. If you look at what's going on in San Fran, like if this doesn't work out now with Robert Saleh, they have to hire, you know, fire and hire another defensive coordinator. Man, it's going to be really tough for them to get any more defensive coordinators under Kyle Shanahan, because he's just going through those things one after the other, after the other, after the other, one every single year. It's kind of been crazy. And for Matt, I said two offensive coordinators so far, and both of these have been successful, right? Nathaniel Hackett was successful in Green Bay prior to leaving. Now he has not been successful since leaving Green Bay, but he was successful in Green Bay, got a head coaching job out of that. That was Hackett. And then after that, you know, you had Steno, who not only is, you know, for the most part, I think, been successful. It's hard to tell, right? Who knows? It's always tough to tell with those assistant coaches, but seemingly has done a good job, and to the point where he's getting head coaching interviews in Chicago and offensive coordinator interviews elsewhere. That is not, you know, nothing's come out of that as of yet, but he's sought after, you know, to some extent throughout the league, or at least he's getting some of those interviews. That seems to be like a pretty good path so far. Defensive coordinator has been a different story. Mike Pettine, hired, fired. Joe Barry, hired, fired. Now, a couple of years and 3 years in Joe Barry's case, I think 2 years in Mike Pettine's case, you know, in between those. And then they finally found what seems to be the actual answer in Jeff Hafley. And that's awesome. That's great. They found that guy, but he's gone through two defensive coordinators. He's also fired two special teams coordinators already in Sean Menenga and Mo Drayton. So two special teams coordinators fired. If he fired Bisaccia, this would be the third special teams coordinator that he would have already fired, which is not genuinely or generally ideal. So that's something that is like, I think has to weigh a little bit here. The other thing that the organization probably not a huge fan of is terminating these contracts, having to pay somebody like Rich Bisaccia still, and then going out and having to pay somebody else to take that job when you apparently hired the wrong guy and now have to fire him again. So I think all of that played a factor. I personally have given Rich probably the most leeway of anybody. I think what you need to understand is that the year before Rich got here, this was a generationally bad special teams. One of the worst special teams I have ever seen. One that literally cost them a chance at maybe making a run at a Super Bowl because they were that incompetent in that 49ers game. Not the only thing that went wrong in that 49ers game, but certainly a huge aspect of what went wrong in that 49ers game. I'm talking about the one with the block punt and everything like that. It was, it was a nightmare situation. And when Rich Bisaccia took over, you knew that this was not just going to be an overnight thing where, oh, everything's fixed. It's rare when you've had something that's been so bad for so long, just bringing in a new coordinator is usually not going to cut it. Now, I give Green Bay credit that they've put a lot more time, effort, and energy. They've added in more assistants. They've put money into this. They've added actual players that are true special teams players to this roster as well. Like, they've done a better job of trying to revamp that. They've put more resources into the special teams. But first year, was willing to give him almost all the accident forgiveness. And it probably went from like the 32nd special teams, or the worst that I've ever seen, to like the 31st, which probably doesn't feel great, but it to me was actually some improvement. It wasn't the worst special teams I'd ever seen in my life. Improvement. All right. In year two, I thought we saw a lot of the same problems. I didn't think we saw a ton of growth, maybe some small growth, right? Although Keyshawn Nixon took we didn't see the same level of returns in year two that we saw in year one with Bisaccia. But you know, overall, slight signs of growth. I was still willing to even chalk that up as like a positive. Like, this was going to be a project, right? But year three was really when I wanted to see the turning of the corner. And I'll be honest, there were signs at times, even midway through the season, right? There was a moment in time midway through the year where Daniel Whalen was punting really well, where your coverage units were covering well, where Brandon McManus was making everything once they finally got him in the door, right? And when, you know, the punt return wasn't going great, but it wasn't anything catastrophic. And the kick return has basically been out of the game. It hasn't really been a factor one way or the other for most teams. So you're willing to live with that. For a while there in the middle of the season, I remember very distinctly, I forget which game it was. I don't know, maybe it was the block kick against the Bears with Carl Brooks. But there was a point in time where we actually, Nagler and I talked about, hey, like this special teams actually feels competent for a little bit here. And we should have known better in all likelihood. And it came kind of crashing down after that. You had the big punt return by the Bears. You had, you know, multiple miscues. You had the kick return fumble to start the Eagles game, a a big missed field goal by McManus in that same playoff game. So a multitude of issues. And you get to the end of the year and you're looking at it and it doesn't look great. Most of these stats were put together by Zach Cruz of Packers Wire. Appreciate Zach for putting these together. But these are some of the numbers for the Packers special teams. He had the special teams had the worst PFF grade of all 32 teams, the Packers special teams. Worst special teams grade of any team in the NFL, again, per PFF. They had 30 missed tackles on special teams, 21 penalties, 3 muff punts, a Nixon fumble kick return in a playoff game. Brandon Narveson missed 5 field goals in 6 games. Whalen finished 26th out of 29th in net punting. You had the Bears' bizarro punt return for a touchdown. So there's just not a ton that's going right. Again, the McManus miss in the Eagles game as well. You did have the field goal block to win the game, so there was that monumental moment there that, again, you won a game in large part due to getting that block on that play. But outside of that, it was a lot to be desired still. And when you look at Bisaccia and what he's basically brought to the table for 3 years, it's really hard to look at it and say it's been good enough, that this is what we were hoping for when you make Bisaccia one of the highest, if not the highest paid special teams coordinators in football. So as much as I didn't expect it, as much as I have not been calling for it, as much as I didn't, again, think it was going to happen, I understand why people wanted it. And I am not here. This is not one of those things where I know sometimes people might get frustrated where everyone's on one side and I come back and counter it and be like, well, actually, Rich Bisaccia is great. No, we're not doing that. Rich, it's not been good enough, right? The special teams as a whole are still a bottom of the league special teams. And that's not what you bring him in to do, to fix. You're looking, like I've said this for years now, just give me competence. Give me the 16th best special teams. I'll be doing flips. I'll pitch in for his raise and his extension moving forward. Just give me the 16th. That's all I need. I don't need a top 10. I don't need a top 5. I don't need number 1. Just get me to 16. Make it so that the offense and the defense decide the game and that the special teams is just going to be neutral. They're going to be Switzerland. We're not going to win the game. We're not going to lose the game. We're just going to be here. We're going to exist. I just want existence. That's all I want. That's all I want out of teams. And it's not there yet. And it is very difficult to argue that the special teams over a 3-year period of time, regardless of where they came from, has been anything but a disappointment up until this point. Patrick Mahomes and KC, Saquon Barkley in Philly, we have our championship matchup all set. Who's going to bring home the Lombardi? Will KC three-peat? Will Saquon run wild? Either way, you absolutely cannot miss out on the last football game of the season with Prize Picks, the best place to win cash while watching the big game. And here's the big thing. Prize Picks is giving away a free pick where one of the starting quarterbacks will only need to throw for 1 yard to win. If you're correct on at least one other stat projection, you can win real cash. And that's not even all. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. And don't forget that Prize Picks doesn't end with football season either. Think LeBron will have more than 39.5 points, rebounds, and assists? Think Donovan Mitchell will score more than 20.5 points? Prize Picks is the best place to win real money all year long. This week, I'm going to keep an eye on Giannis in Milwaukee, Steph for Golden State, and I'm going to look for Mikko Rantanen to make an impact with his new team following that huge blockbuster hockey trade. And don't forget to download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game. I think that's a fair thing to say. I really do. I understand why they're maybe wanting to keep them. And sometimes it's tough. Like maybe they've seen a lot of growth and maybe that turn of the corner after 3 years going into year 4, maybe that's when it's going to happen. I'm skeptical to say the least. I'm skeptical that this is when it's going to happen. But what I will say is, you know, he's going to get another opportunity. Hopefully he can turn it around. It seems like finally they're going to go into a season, assuming they can get McManus back with the same long snapper, punter, holder, kicker. And we'll see if Nixon wants to return kicks. That would be a nice thing to have back. And a lot of the core special teams should, you know, theoretically be back this offseason as well. So maybe that can help, but it needs to be better. There's no two ways around that. So yeah, that to me is where things are at right now. As far as like where this ranks as the fire Joe Barry, fire Mike Pettine, fire Mo Drayton, fire, you know, everyone that people have wanted fired, I guess we can add now fire LaFleur and fire Gutekunst and everyone else, I guess. This one's still lower to me than Drayton, Menenga, Pettine, or Barry. I you know, those four were all obvious at the time, like very crystal clear, blatantly obvious. Okay, it's time. They got to go in a different direction and try something new. I wasn't quite there yet with Bisaccia, or at least if I was, it wasn't to that level. And again, whatever that means is up to anyone. But I think he deserved is such a wrong word. I don't know that he deserved this extension slash being brought back. I guess I'm surprised at the extension. If they said we're going to bring him back for the last year on his contract, cool. I understood it. I would have gotten it. Giving him the 1 year extension seems a little bit weirder to me, but we'll see. Hopefully it works out. Hopefully this is the year that it turns the corner and they are going to look super smart for keeping him one more season. The last thing I'll say one more time is I do believe that he is a value add in this organization in some capacity, but man, it is time to get that special teams performing at a much higher level. Luke Getzey, also per Tom Silverstein, is going to be a senior offensive assistant. Silverstein did not rule out that Getzey could potentially get an offensive coordinator job with the Packers if Steno leaves for another team and gets a play calling job somewhere else. But until that point, it seems like he is a senior offensive assistant, which does still leave that quarterback's job open. We'll see who eventually fills that. But as of right now, at least per Tom Silverstein, it sounds like that will not be Luke Getzey filling that spot. The one thing I'll add in right now, as well as to this, I see some people saying, hey, like, why? Why are you bringing back this guy who failed miserably in Chicago, failed miserably with the Raiders? To me, couple things. One, if they were hiring him, if he does eventually get, you know, offensive coordinator with Green Bay, I think that's a little bit more of a conversation to have of like, hey, is that you know, he's just got fired from it twice. Is that the move that you want to make? Are there not better options out there? But number one, he's not an offensive coordinator. And when he was in Green Bay as an offensive assistant, he was really good. Matt LaFleur, nothing but positive things to say. And I think he's more than deserving of this type of role. I think that's no problem at all. Like that's probably a great role for him. And the other thing I'll say is those two offenses in particular, with the awful offensive lines, the awful quarterbacks, everything, those were, you're going there to fail positions. And I'm sure, you know, you don't see it that way when you take the position. And sometimes you have to take the opportunity when it comes, but those were really, really, really rough positions to be in. And so I'm not going to hold Getzey too much, hold too much against him for the Raiders and the Bears and two atrocious offenses. You know, look at the personnel and you're going to get all you need to know from those two teams. So I have no issue with Matt bringing back Getzey, especially in a senior offensive assistant role. All right, let's get to our main topic. My apologies for, obviously the Bisaccia thing is pretty fresh. And I debated going back and forth as to whether or not I just wanted to do a Bisaccia episode today. I figure we could still do kind of our main topic. So here we go. Myles Garrett, Max Crosby. Is it possible? Should Green Bay do it? We talked about Khalil Mack the other day and why Green Bay would potentially want to add a premium pass rusher to this team. They just need one. They don't have a premium 1A pass rusher. And there's a lot of teams that do. Green Bay does not. Rashawn Gary has not evolved into that. LVN has shown no signs of evolving into that. Devontae Wyatt has not evolved into that. They've spent resources. Certainly, they don't have the ROI to show for it. And sometimes when you don't get that the way that you expect, you have to go above and beyond and find it in different ways. And that could be via a trade or maybe free agency. As I mentioned with Khalil Mack, it would give them a huge playmaker on all three levels, a Myles Garrett or Max Crosby on the front, a Adrian Cooper on the second level, and then a Xavier McKinney on the third level. I do believe that the presence of a Crosby or a Mack or a Garrett would make all of the defensive linemen better because everyone's going to be focusing on that player. Everyone else is going to see fewer double teams because the focus is going to go on this individual player. I think it gives Jeff Hafley a ton of options and probably a lot more faith going with four-man rushes and how to get home, but it's also going to add a lot of variety. You know, sometimes when you get a double on somebody like a Myles Garrett or a Max Crosby, you get two guys on him, you drop him into coverage. Now you got two guys doing nothing. You're basically playing 11-on-9 football sometimes too. So there's some really fun stuff that you can do there. I think it elevates the defense to an entirely different level. And I think there's just a different fear factor. I mean, we talk about it a decent amount of, you know, who's the player, whether it's on offense or defense, that the opposing coordinator is spending time on. Xavier McKinney, definitely in that conversation. Adrian Cooper, very quickly getting in that conversation. But if you're looking for an intimidation factor, if you're looking for an offensive coordinator that's going to lose sleep at night, man, add a Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett to your front on this team, and they're going to lose a lot more sleep at night. It's a total different game changer. You know, there's going to be a different fear factor for quarterbacks. The quarterback's clock is going to get sped up, and running backs are going to find it tougher because these are good run defenders as well. It changes the game. So that's why Green Bay would potentially be interested in a move like this. So what would Garrett and Crosby actually add to the team? First of all, let me just tell you, we're not going to do huge scouting reports here. We don't need to. I went through, watched a little bit less than I did with Khalil Mack, for both of these guys. They're both phenomenal players. I mean, phenomenal freaking football players. I mean, Myles Garrett's a top 10, and it's probably top 5 player in the league. Like, he's that good. Max Crosby, a little bit of a down year this past year. He is still a game wrecker, a game changer, and somebody that you have to constantly be aware of. They are both phenomenal players. Myles Garrett over the last 4 seasons per PFF, 92.0, 92.5, 93.9, 92.3. He has a 90 or better pass rush grade over his last 6 seasons. This past year, 83 pressures, 14 sacks, 13 hits, 56 hurries on 477 pass rush attempts per PFF. All, I might add, while being the focal point of the offense, that your main goal is to make sure that that guy doesn't wreck games, and all he does is wreck games. He has 110 sacks over his 8-year career per PFF. He's also a very, very strong run defender. He's an absolute stud, one of the best players, period, in all of football. He will turn 30 years old in December, so that is noteworthy here when it comes to age. For Max Crosby, his last 4 seasons, 91.7, 90.1, 92.1, and 74.1 per PFF. 108 pressures in 2021, only had 54 this past season, 8 sacks, 12 hits, 34 hurries. He did have some injury issues towards the end of this past year. 2024 was not quite as impactful, but he still strikes fear. He's a stud. He's a great fit within this defense, and he only turns 28 in August, so he is still very much in his prime and a little bit younger than what Myles Garrett is. As I mentioned, these are two of the best premier pass rushers. They would unlock the pass rush in Green Bay in a significant way. But it takes two to tango. These are not unrestricted free agents. These are players that are under contract for the Browns and the Raiders, respectively. From a Myles Garrett standpoint, he basically can't be traded before June 1st. It's basically an impossibility. There's some things that they could do, but they take a $16.5 million additional cap hit by trading him ahead of June 1st. Something they really can't do, especially with all the issues that they have with the Deshaun Watson contract. It's a nightmare right now financially. So if you're going to do a Myles Garrett trade, it basically has to happen after June 1st, which is after the draft, which is after free agency. It gets a lot more complicated. You would have to involve future draft assets because you're not trading it before June 1st. You know why I think the Browns could still have some interest here? Listen, he's under contract for 2 more years. He's about to turn 30 years old, and there is a negative percent chance. There's a negative percent chance that the Browns are competing for anything over the next 2 seasons, at least anything of significance. So you have a 2-year contract with a almost 30-year-old player that in that 2 years, you have no chance of actually competing for anything. And now is the time to get the mother load. He could suffer an injury this year, and then you don't get that trade in return. Next year, his trade value could go down, turning 31, only 1 year left on his deal. It could completely change. So if you want to get the huge payload of picks and everything that you could potentially get for him, you better do it now. And if I'm the Browns, as much as I love Myles Garrett, I probably have to do it. You have to start rebuilding that team from scratch. And it does potentially make some sense for them, but not being able to do it until after June 1st definitely complicates things to some extent. The Raiders, a little bit of a different situation. They would actually save $17.7 million on the salary cap this year if Max Crosby was traded prior to June 1st. He's only under contract for 2 more seasons. The Raiders are likely not competing against the Chiefs, the Chargers, or the Broncos over these next 2 seasons. It's probably best for them to stock assets and sell high at this point in time. Now, the issue is Pete Carroll, new head coach. You have a new GM, new regime. Tom Brady's there. Everything's getting a fresh coat of paint. And I'm not sure if that regime is going to want to look at it, even though they probably should look at it and say, let's trade away what we have and start building this thing up the right way. I have a feeling they're going to say, Max Crosby, centerpiece of our team. He's going to be on the billboards. He's going to be on this and that. And he's going to be all the promotion materials, yada, yada, yada. I don't think that they're going to probably trade him. They should probably trade him. I'm not as convinced that they will potentially do that. both of these could end up in that situation. We'll see. You never know. Things can change in a blink of an eye. They probably should, but whether or not they actually do is an entirely different story. Now, what would these contracts look like if they were traded to Green Bay? Max Crosby, 2 years, $42.8 million. All right. $23.1 million in 2025, $19.7 million in 2026. That would be, on the surface, what you'd be acquiring in that trade. Miles Garrett, $4.9 million contract in 2025. Then it gets crazy with option bonuses and a bunch of different stuff. So that gets a little bit more complex. Here's the thing. If I thought that it mattered, I would dig into it further and we'd go through it all in painstaking detail. You guys know that. The issue is when you trade for either of these players, both of them are going to want long-term extensions. They're going to want Nick Bosa money. They're going to want top of the line. You just traded for me. I want, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. You're going to sign me to the highest paid defensive end contract in football. We're talking 5 years, $170 million is what Nick Bosa got. Now, Bosa was younger, but you could argue Garrett's better and Crosby's still certainly in his prime. They're going to want around that number. 5 years, 170. My guess is 5 years, 175, up at $35 million a year is what you're probably looking at with a crap ton of guarantees involved in that as well. And if you're not sure about it, well, ask the Jets about the Hassan Reddick situation. They trade for him. They say, we just want you to play out your contract. That was a one-year deal instead of two, but we just want you to play out your contract. That Reddick and his agent, yep, we're good with that. He gets there and he's like, actually, I want a new contract. Now you've traded away picks, a boatload of picks. And in this case, you would. The Reddick one wasn't quite as steep, but you're going to trade away a bunch of picks. And if they can play hardball at that point, they can say, oh, you just traded away two first round picks? Awesome. If you don't make me the highest paid player in football, I'm going to sit out. And now you have to get your return on investment, right? So like all the, not to bring up the L word, the leverage word here, but they have all the leverage at that point in time. So you better be ready to work out that new deal. And both of them are going to want to be paid top of the line, $35 million per year for about a 5 year contract, similar to what Nick Bosa got. So you got to be ready for that. And by the way, that $35 million per year, that is more than Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs got combined per year. And both of those were just 4 year deals, just to give you a sense of what that kind of money can do for you. The next question, of course, is what does the trade compensation look like? Actually, a familiar friend of ours from just the other day, Khalil Mack, can actually provide some guidance into this. Khalil Mack was traded when he was 27 years old as a premium pass rusher, not too dissimilar to Max Crosby, who's 28. And now Miles Garrett's a few years older. He's going to turn 30, right? However, you could make an argument that Miles Garrett is the best of these pass rushers. He's that freaking good. So in that deal, Khalil Mack, a second round pick and a fifth round pick, went to the Bears for two first round picks, a third round pick, and a sixth round pick. It just so happened that first round pick that the Bears traded away, the first one was pick 24. Well, Green Bay just so happens to be picking pick 23. So this is kind of like a really nice starter pack for what a trade could look like. So it would look like this if you put everything together. The Packers would trade their 23rd pick in the draft this year, their sixth round pick this year, their first round pick next year, a third round pick next year, and that would be what they would trade for whatever pass rusher it would be, Miles Garrett or Max Crosby, a second round pick next year, and a seventh round pick next year. That's what you'd ultimately be looking at. That fifth rounder that I mentioned actually turned into a seventh because it was conditional. So that's where it ended up. Let's just boil it down to the lowest common denominator. Let's just say a first and a second round pick. All right, nuke all the other stuff. Let's say it would take a first and second round pick to acquire both of these players. By the way, it could be more than that. And maybe it's a little bit less than that, but you're probably talking first and third at worst. You might be talking about two firsts and a player at best. Tough to say, but I'm going to say a first and a second. We'll just make it nice, easier. So 23rd pick in this year's draft, and then a second rounder either this year or next year, something like that. Make it quite simple. What you have to look at in a deal like this, and again, Goody talked about this a little bit in his press conference as well, you are not just trading away a first and a second round pick for said player, Miles Garrett or Max Crosby. That's not the deal. You have to look at all the assets that are going into that. You're giving a $35 million per year contract in this situation on a five-year deal, a massive, massive, massive contract with a ton of guarantees, plus a first-round pick, which happens to be usually a good player who has a very cheap contract, and a second round pick who usually happens to be a good player on a super cheap contract for 4 years for each of them, 5 years if you pick up the fifth year option on the first rounder. You are losing those opportunities and those cheap contracts, and those are what are really gold in the NFL, is super talented players who are making next to nothing. That's how you really stack your team up the right way. You're giving up the options of first and second round picks that could result in, again, that lottery ticket, the gold that you actually want, the super talented player that's not making anything, two top opportunities in a first and second round pick at that, while also giving up $35 million per year on a massive contract for a player like this. For example, right, you could have probably any free agent that you wanted in this draft class, T. Higgins, Trey Smith, Devontae Adams, Khalil Mack, and then some with that money. Your pick, $35 million per year will probably get any free agent on this market. You don't have to trade anything in that situation. And now you still have your first and second round pick. What you could be looking at, if you want to look at it this way, $35 million per year should get you Khalil Mack and DJ Reed. And you would still have your first and second round picks. So would you rather have Myles Garrett or Khalil Mack, DJ Reed, the 23rd overall pick in the draft, and your second rounder? That's a steep trade, right? That's a lot that would go into that. And if you don't like Khalil Mack and DJ Reed, by the way, enter in $35 million worth of spending for a variety of players if you want to. $35 million per year in contracts for 5 years. Massive free agent spending. Two huge priority free agents. Again, more than McKinney and Jacobs made combined on a four-year deal. Two big-time free agents, plus a first-round pick, plus a second-round pick. That's a huge, huge ask to give up in any trade. Not to mention, that's a lot of eggs in one basket. What happens if you make that deal? Two premium picks and a bunch of salary cap space, and you go out week one and Garrett pops an Achilles, Crosby tears his ACL. Now it's all gone. Now you have nothing. And the next year, they're still recovering from said injury and probably not themselves. And you just invested a first, a second, and $35 million per year on a five-year guaranteed contract on that one asset. That is a very, very tough thing to do. And it's not just that. These are massively talented players. And as philosophical that Green Bay gets with these sort of decisions and thinks about all the things that we're talking about right now, there are owners across the league that see shiny toy. Ooh. I know Myles Garrett. I know he's an all-pro. He's a 99 in Madden. I know that name. I've seen him play. He's really good. I know Max Crosby. He's really, really good. Ooh, shiny toy. Shiny, shiny toy. It takes two first-round picks and a third-round pick? Awesome. All right, I'm in. I'll do it. They don't know. They don't care. And they're meddling. And they see that shiny toy, and that's all they want. I want that new toy. So they go out and they get it, and they're going to have less responsibility and not think these things through like Green Bay does. If you think that Max Crosby or Myles Garrett are going to become available on the market, and your team, our Green Bay Packers, are going to be the one that outbids 30 other teams for his services or their services, whew, I will be stunned. I usually say maybe I'll be surprised. I will be stunned. If Goody decides that this is the time, we're going to spend multiple premium picks plus a massive contract, and we're going to outbid anyone. Even if Goody gets to that point, he's got that sense of urgency. It's building inside of him, and he's going to do something major. This is going to be his moment. He's going to go get Myles Garrett. And he said, I'm going to give that first round pick. I'm going to give that second round pick. I'm going to give that 5 year, $35 million per year contract to Myles Garrett. I'm all in. And he finally convinces himself. What happens if any team that's picking 22 through 1 says, we'll do the same trade, we have a better draft capital? You're screwed. Now you have to up it. Now is Goody going to give two first round picks, two firsts and a third? Like, you're just probably going to end up getting outbid anyway. is what my guess would be, at least for what Goody would be probably willing to trade away. Because some team's going to probably give something stupid for either of these guys. Just usually how this works more often than not. So even if Green Bay gets to that point, I'm not super confident that they're going to be the one that offers the most. It's definitely outside the scope of Green Bay's philosophy. They've never really done anything quite like this. It does sound like they were interested in Khalil Mack in that trade a few years back. And guess what happened? They got outbid by somebody else. In that case, the Chicago Bears. You have a finite amount of resources that you can spend in the NFL. A finite amount of draft picks, a finite amount of salary cap space. $35 million per year on a five-year deal plus a first-round pick plus a second-round pick is a huge, huge, huge percentage of those available assets. To put it all into one player, regardless of how good that player is more often than not a really tough sell and more often than not the wrong move. If you look at if Green Bay did that deal in 2024, right? They did something similar. They lose, at best, Jordan Morgan in the first round, Javon Bullard in the second round, Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs. The trade would have looked like Morgan, Bullard, McKinney, Jacobs for Max Crosby or Myles Garrett. Maybe you take it. Maybe you do. At worst, maybe they're like, you know what? Actually, we want that higher of the second round picks. So you would be without Morgan, Edgerrin Cooper, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs for that one player. And you might still say, I'll take Myles Garrett. He's that good. Maybe. But just think of the take Jordan Morgan away from it. Xavier McKinney's not out there at safety. You don't have Edgerrin Cooper at linebacker, Josh Jacobs at running back. Those were literally Jacobs, like three of my top, I don't know, six, seven. They were two of my two highest graded defenders and my highest graded offensive player last year in McKinney, Cooper, and Jacobs. You're trading away those three for one pass rusher. It's a really, really tough pill to swallow. Here's the thing. The Packers won't do it. It's not the right move. They shouldn't do it. And there's plenty of better options that we can and we will discuss moving forward. And I want to be crystal clear here. Just because I don't, you know, maybe like the idea, to me, these are still conversations worth having. There's a lot of buzz out there of Max Crosby and Myles Garrett. When I see that, I'm not going and being like, all right, how can the Packers, you know, trade for so-and-so that's clearly never going to happen? Like that's not my prerogative. But when there's all this buzz out there of like, oh, Green Bay needs to go get a Crosby or a Garrett, you really have to look at it from a much wider view. I'll put it this way. There's a lot of times going to be these clickbaity sort of topics that happen. And I don't like creating clickbait. Not my cup of tea. I don't know. It's just not my thing. I always joke my one every year will be the trade deadline one, or like the odds of the Green Bay Packers actually making a move at the trade deadline is relatively slim. In fact, there's very few moves overall, but it's a fun one to do every year. That's my one sort of clickbaity one. But what I will say is when I see these clickbaity or these headline topics of the Packers need to trade for Myles Garrett or Max Crosby, what I love doing is discussing it exactly like this. And sometimes we'll talk about how, yeah, I actually think it makes sense. And other times I'm gonna be like, nah, I don't see it. Maybe you do. That's okay. Again, you know, good minds can disagree. That's totally fine. But for me, don't see it. Don't ever think it's going to happen. And if you're holding your breath for a Max Crosby or Myles Garrett trade, just don't hold it too long because it's going to be a while and probably never. And you do need oxygen in order to survive. So don't do that. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you guys so much for joining me. I always appreciate you a ton. Thank you for the support. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. And of course, check out those Pack a Day podcast YouTube memberships as well. Members Q&A coming up later this week. I will see you guys tomorrow. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Step Keat, Lovin' Football, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, and Ian Ewing. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.